Sheffield Live. Made in Sheffield, made by you.
If you like rock in all its forms, you will love Glory Days. You can listen to us locally on 93.2 FM and on the telly, and anywhere in the world on sheffieldlive.org. What do you think, Dawn? You know what? I think he likes it. That's Glory Days, every Monday 1 till 3 here on Sheffield Live. Bosh, bosh. Oops, I've had an accident.
Hello, I'm Harry Wilburn. I present Steel & Wire every Wednesday, 10 a.m. Americana, Bluegrass, American Roots, and more. Lots of guests, lots of local music and musicians. That's Steel & Wire, Wednesday, 10 a.m.
You're listening to fabulous Harry Wilburn on Steel & Wire.
It's time to open the music box. Join me, Steve Roden, every Thursday morning between 10 and 12 for music from the 40s to the 90s from my own music collection. Songs I've grown up with, ones I am sure you will enjoy hearing again. Hope to see you then.
If you love new music and you want to discover the best new artists out there, then tune into The Backroom with me, Paddy. I'll be playing the best in new indie, electro, EDM and punk and showcasing new Sheffield talent. Also music news, local and national gig guide and new album releases. So tune into The Backroom every Thursday night between 6 and 7 p.m. here on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM.
This is Sheffield Live.
N-E-X.
Poetry in motion. Turn a tender eyes to me. Steamers in the ocean. Sweeter than a harmony. But you blinded me with silence.
She blinded me with silence.
Good morning and welcome to the Live Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM on digital if you're in South Yorkshire or sheffieldlive.org, talking about science in all its different forms every Saturday morning. And what a miserable Saturday morning it is, but it's not cold.
No, it's not.
Saturday the 7th of September 2024, just in case you are listening on catch up. Got Julie and Paul live in the studio as usual between 11 and 12. We did the show beforehand, Soul Plus. If you tuned in then. Also, we couldn't promo this show, but there's another Soul show on. It's called Soul Casino. It's on this radio station every Thursday night between 5 and 6, just before Paddy's Backroom show. Amazing. So you can check out. It's 60 soulful minutes of classic Northern Soul by Stevlo. Stevlo, you need a
show.
It is a good show. Very, very, what would I say, specialist in the music.
Mostly vinyl.
Stevlo, you need a promo, mate. That's all we're saying. Anyway, later in the show, we'll be speaking to RPG. He's still looking for inspiration, he said, when we asked him what his topic was. Later in the show, also, we've got Phil Muffett from the Mexburn Swinton Astronomical Society. He's doing his general astronomical update. At the minute, it's at Manvers Waterfront Boat Club, doing a charity event. So he's going to tell us a little bit about that. And he may even tell us why the weather's so strange, because he knows a lot about that as well. All great stuff. Next week, second Saturday of the month, it should be Dr. Ogo Osamo, but he's still on his summer recess. All being well, he'll be back in October. So first up, we've got a story I saw in the press the other week about bacteria can recycle rare metals from old batteries, say scientists.
Wow.
So scientists have formed an unusual new alliance in their fight against climate change. They are using bacteria to help extract rare metals, vital in the development of green technology. Without the help of these microbes, we could run out of raw materials to build turbines, electric cars and solar panels, the scientists say. The work has been spearheaded by scientists at the University of Edinburgh and aims to use bacteria that can extract lithium, cobalt, manganese and other minerals from old batteries and discarded electronic equipment. These scarce and expensive metals are vital for making electric cars and other devices, upon which green technology devices depend. And that's a point stressed by Professor Louise Horsfall, who's Chair of Sustainable Biotechnology at Edinburgh. She says, if we are going to end our dependence on petrochemicals and rely on electricity for our heating, transport and power, then we will become more and more dependent on metals. All those photovoltaics, drones, 3D printing machines, hydrogen fuel cells, wind turbines and motors for electric cars require metals, many of them rare, that are key to their operations. So politics is also an issue, scientists warn. China controls not only the main supplies of rare earth elements, but dominates the processing of them as well. So to get around these problems, she says that we need to develop a circular economy where we reuse these minerals wherever possible. Otherwise, we will run out of materials very quickly. She said there is only a finite amount of these metals on Earth and we can no longer afford to throw them away as waste. We need new recycling technologies if we want to do something about global warming. And the key to this recycling is the microbe, so says Professor Louise Horsfall, who's the Chair of Sustainable Biotechnology at Edinburgh. She says, bacteria are wonderful little crazy things that can carry out some weird and wonderful processes. Some bacteria can synthesize nanoparticles of metals, for example. Basically, they latch on metal atoms and then they split them out as nanoparticles so that they are not poisoned by them. So Professor Louise Horsfall and her team have now taken waste from electronic batteries and cars, dissolved it, and then used bacteria to latch onto specific metals in the waste and deposit these as some solid chemicals. Crucially, the strains of bacteria used to extract these metals were naturally occurring ones. In the future, Professor Horsfall and her team plan to use gene-edited versions to boost their output of metals. For example, we need to be able to extract cobalt and nickel separately, which we cannot do at present. So that's amazing. And finally, Professor Louise Horsfall says, we can't afford to throw away metals as waste. There you go. Metal Guru there by T-Rex. Amazing. 1972, can you believe? And we played that. We're talking about bacteria can recycle rare metals from old batteries. Important stuff moving forward. Just tuned in, of course, you're listening to the Life Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM. Next up, our environment update for the week. Southern African droughts, one of the worst droughts in history, continues to take its toll on Southern Africa, with food reserves in Namibia depleted to such an extent that elephants and hippos are being culled to provide food. Namibia has exhausted 84% of its food reserves, according to the United Nations, leaving 1.4 million people at risk of severe food insecurity. People in Zimbabwe, another country affected by the drought, have resorted to similarly desperate measures, digging into dry riverbeds to extract whatever water might be left.
So going from hot to cold.
Indeed.
Weather-related deaths. Cold weather is responsible for more than 8 times the number of deaths as heat in Europe, according to research published in the Lancet Public Health, which found there were an estimated 363,809 deaths per year from cold, compared with an average of 43,729 per year from heat. However, the gap between the two data sets is predicted to narrow as global warming brings a significant increase in the number of heat-related deaths.
Interesting stuff, eh? North Sea oil and gas. The future of two big North Sea oil and gas projects has been thrown into doubt as the current government says it will not contest a legal challenge that could block them. The Jackdaw gas field and the Rosebank oil and gas field were approved by the previous government, but a judicial review by the environment groups Greenpeace and Uplift will no longer be defended. Meanwhile,
offshore wind farm Cruise, the Rampion wind farm located off the coast of Britain, is one of the UK's largest renewable energy projects, capable of powering 350,000 homes. It is also an unlikely tourist spot, offering people the rare opportunity to see the vast turbines up close.
Interesting stuff, because the next story isn't a good one when we talk about coasts.
No.
Oh, this is really sad. So UK Red List seabirds. 5 more seabird species have been added to the UK Red List of birds at most in need of most of conservation, joining the 5 that are already on that list. So the 5 that are already on that list are puffin, kittiwake, herring gull, roseate tern and arctic skua. Now, the UK is known for its colonies of seabirds nesting in huge numbers on cliffs, but many species are now in trouble because of climate change, unsustainable fishing practices, offshore renewable energy development and habitat loss. Of the 26 seabirds that breed on the UK's coastline and islands, 10 are now on the red list. So the 5 new entries are the great black-backed gull, which is the largest gull, the common gull, the arctic tern, the great skua and leach's storm petrel. But there is good news for some of the seabirds that breed in the UK. The shag moves from the red list to the amber list, and the black guillemot has moved from the amber list to the green list. But finally, and this is really sad as well, of the 245 species of birds regularly seen in the UK, which covers farmland, woodland and garden birds as well as seabirds, 73 of those species, or 30%, are now on the red list. But on a happier note,
yes, the Trust targets, the National Trust has hit its target to restore nature across more than 25,000 hectares of land a year early. Ben McCarthy, the charity's head of nature and restoration ecology, said, "Our focus on restoring our most important habitats to help our precious wildlife is not only contributing towards national conservation targets, but is also a critical response to the challenge of climate change."
And finally, safer street lights. Nocturnal light pollution has been found to be a huge driver of insect decline, prompting experts to seek out alternatives. A city in Finland has announced plans to trial pollinator-friendly streetlights that cause less disruption for nocturnal insects. So authorities in Lahti, in the south of Finland, have installed a row of streetlights that filter out the blue end of the light spectrum that insects confuse with organic light. Light pollution has been cited as a key driver of insect decline, interfering with their movements, foraging, reproduction and predation. Amazing right there, Frank Zappa, City of Tiny Lights live. And why do we play that, you might think? Well, Safer Street Lights, a city in Finland, Lahti actually, is putting in Safer Street Lights to stop insect decline. All good stuff. You are, of course, listening to the Lifestyles Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM on digital if you're in South Yorkshire or sheffieldlive.org. Talking about science in all its different forms. We should have our PG on the line. Good morning, PG.
Good morning.
Oh, what an intro for you, eh? Oh, we keep changing things, don't we?
I don't know. I'm confused.
I know.
That's not you.
Easily done, isn't it? So what's caught your eye in the science news this week then, Paul?
Oh, a couple of bits. One on the local front is something we talked about, the benefits of greenery, green social prescription. And both of the Sheffield Universities, Sheffield Uni and Sheffield Hallam Uni, have been involved in a project to promote the green social prescription. So the research led by the University of Sheffield into a partnership actually with Sheffield Hallam, University of Exeter, University of Plymouth, and to look at green social prescriptions to support people to engage with nature as part of treatment. So 8,300 people were involved who had mental health needs, and they took part in this project, and the findings were published for the Department of Environment, Food and Rural Affairs on the 4th of the month. So basically saying that it's very successful getting people to engage with greenery, with nature, and it is good for mental health.
Yeah.
So, well done, Sheffield University, and good luck to all those people who were involved, I guess.
Yeah, brilliant.
Yeah, and then the other bit of research which sort of triggered a thought process, I guess, was talk about getting the mycelial part of mushrooms involved with the electronics of a robot.
Oh.
So basically seeding the robot circuit boards with mycelial material, it actually they give off electrical impulses.
Wow.
those electrical impulses can actually promote the movement. So basically there's one design was looks a bit like a starfish, which could sort of move its legs and therefore walk, and another sort of device which used it in a different way, but it kind of sort of said, well, hang on a minute, that's incredible. Now, we talked about biomechanical robots, but this is sort of a fungal.
Well, it's. I'm sure a while back I read about you can make handbags and materials out of mushroom, you know, the fibres, yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah. Well, I thought, okay, so what is it that they're actually using? And I know that you do a bit of sort of gardening work. So it's the underground part. I mean, the bit that we see of a mushroom, the fruiting bit, I guess, on top, has a massive underground network connecting it. And it's part of the root system of plants and trees that interconnect below ground. It's called the mycelial net. And it's symbiotic fungal partnerships which extend the as wide as the mycelium can grow. So actually what you see growing on a tree is connected down through its roots and stretches miles and miles.
Wow.
And what it does is it can actually transfer moisture. So it can help the tree by providing it with extra moisture. But it also transfers things like carbon around. And you start to think, well, hang on, this is a massive sort of underground thing that we didn't know about. So they're saying that the tiny threads, so very difficult to actually see. Sometimes you see them when they're in mass, but they can stretch for such a long distance, and they can connect the individual plants to transfer water, nitrogen, carbon, and other minerals. So when you're talking about the thing to actually use nature to break down some of those metals that you were talking
about,
you can see that that's part of the sort of outcome of this network. Greater fungal organisms that wrap around and bore into tree roots can actually then transfer between trees and other plants through this network. So kind of interesting. And then looking on from that, I was thinking, well, you know, this is really quite interesting. And when we talked about mental health, mushrooms also can boost your mind, your mental health. Okay, I mean, we've heard about the magic mushrooms.
Going to say, be careful, Paul, now.
Yeah, and I think that some of the American Indians use things like peyote mushrooms as a mind-expanding sort of hallucinogenic. But lion's mane mushrooms, which are called that because they look like a shaggy lion mane, although mainly white, so they get that. But that's supposed to be a great supporter for your mental health. And then there's a mushroom type called reishi, which is called the immortality mushroom, which is supposed to help you with longevity.
Oh.
So to help you grow older better. There's a turkey tail is a local version of sort of the mind-supporting mushroom. Shiitake is obviously a very fragrant addition to cooking that a lot of people are doing. And maitake, called the dancing mushroom. And mushrooms can provide immune support. They're full of antioxidants. They support anti-inflammatory response, help balance your blood sugar, support brain health and cognition. So you can get sort of lots of supplements if the various companies sort of sell it in different forms, but you support the nervous system, but also increase your energy and stamina, which apparently some athletes make use of.
Wow.
So that sort of mushroom, there's such a range of mushrooms, and we've got this love-hate relationship, because if we don't understand them very much, we're very much in danger of making the wrong choice of mushrooms.
Well, I'm going to say, if you're going to forage your own mushrooms, you've got to be very, very careful. You need to know what you're doing, otherwise you can be rather poor-like.
Absolutely, and I think you know, the whole thing about nature providing this sort of wide range, but it's the kind of network connection that's intriguing. Because I think, if you remember back science fiction days, the day of the Triffids, they were plants that could actually uproot themselves and walk.
Yeah.
Come on.
So this, my cell can actually make connections. So there's so much happening below ground level that we don't see. So just when you're walking along and you see a fairy ring of mushrooms, and you think, "Oh, that's pretty." Just consider how far the reach of that could be.
Indeed, and it's of course it's a plant. It's plant-based food, so people are, you know, eating more and more. You know, you can have like a mushroom burger, can't you? You'd like cook a mushroom, a big flat mushroom, put it between some bread, and you'd have it. You'd eat it like a burger. That's very popular.
It's very widely used as a substitute for meat.
Yeah.
Because it's got that sort of texture and can pick up that kind of taste. So, as I say, you can eat it, but there's still a kind of question mark hanging over exactly how the mycelium works and how far and how complex a network it can produce. So It could be that we're eating some things today, but there could be lots of other things to be found. So I think for science, it's a great area for research. And I think we said that mushrooms can be processed to make building materials. They can be processed to make a kind of a leather substitute.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a very, very sort of versatile, complex organism. And I say the bit that we see above the ground, like so many things, is far outweighed by what happens underground.
Yeah, in fact, I'm hungry now, Paul. It doesn't take long, I'll tell you. But isn't science amazing what you can find out and what you can use, and it just moves forward and...
Well, it certainly is. I mean, I think, again, some of the sort of research that's going on talking about treatment for brain aneurysms is another bit of sort of development and research work that's coming to fruition, where they can inject a drug encapsulated within a surround that will melt at a certain temperature, and they can steer that drug particle to the area of a brain aneurysm using magnets and sort of scanning techniques to check where it's got to. When they get enough concentration around the blood clot, they can then activate it by pushing it past its heat threshold and deliver the drug directly at the aneurysm,
wow,
which is a massive step forward. It means you don't have to actually enter the brain through the skull, which is always a sort of difficult process. And they kind of give it a mechanized thing as if it's a nanobot. But that's the truth of it. It's a carriage to deliver drugs to a particular point and a controlled way of releasing them so that you can be much more targeted. There's also sort of research now which kind of got some roots going back into COVID. And what they're doing now is the T cells that were part of what we talked about when we were discussing the COVID virus. The new system is to use targeted T cells to attack cancer cells. And again, they can be custom designed to attack the proteins on cancer cells and destroy the cells. So there are already experiments underway with real people in real life situations with targeted treatment of cancers. So, amazing, I say. I think the threads that link us all together in one way or another, it's fantastic to find the roots. And I think I found, just on a final note, because I know you need to move on, is they dug up a very ancient creature and managed to get a DNA sample out of it. And what they found with this kind of slug-type worm, which had a prickly surface to protect it, was that its genome was massively bigger than our current genome. So to sequence it was in the order of tens of thousands of times more complicated genome than our current one.
Wow.
So you never know what you're going to get.
Well, you don't, indeed, as things move on. Fantastic stuff, as always, Paul. Today the universities will be starting back in the coming weeks, won't they? Sheffield will be humming. You know, we are based opposite the hubs, aren't we? So it's been quiet, but they'll all be coming back and there'll all be new students, some of them.
Goodness
to
me.
Study West in Street. Sheffield, eh?
Yeah, West Street will be alive again.
It will be. Great stuff, Paul. Well. We'll speak to you Monday at Glory Days Rock Show 1 till 3. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Oh, Love Supreme there by Carl Santana and John McLaughlin. And we played that because PG likes that sort of thing. If you've just tuned in, you're of course listening to the Life Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM on digital if you're in South Yorkshire, sheffieldlive.org. Talking about science in all its different forms. We've got Phil Muffett on the line. Good morning, Phil.
Good morning.
You're on location at Manvers Waterfront Boat Club.
Yeah, sea view.
Sea view. Oh, hey, it looks right. So what are you doing? Charity events?
Yes, my wife's in one of the dragon boats.
Wow.
Coaching. I think there's about 8 teams out on the lake today. I think they've just done the 3rd race.
Wow. And where's the money going to then?
It's going to the Manvers Waterfront Boat Club.
Oh, is it? Yeah, because you are a charity.
You're a charity. It's the Manvers Charity Dragon Boat Shield Race today.
So are you competing?
I'm not competing, no. I'm running the Manvers... Well, I'm not running it. I'm helping with the Manvers sales desk. So we've got lots of items, Manvers logos on it, and fluffy toys for sale. All towards.
So family. Get down there. You're there till 4 o'clock.
Yes, there's lots of people down there, lots of stalls doing all kinds of different things.
Brilliant.
So it's a nice Saturday day out down by the water.
But you do sound a bit gruff, Phil. Yeah, what you been doing, eh?
I'm just coming down. I've caught a bug or a virus. I'm not too sure.
Doing too much, that's what it is. So if people tuned in last week, they will have heard you doing your astro clinic last week, but this week you're going to do your general astronomical update. But before that, can we just ask, what on earth's going on with the weather? What do you know, eh?
Yeah. Well, the guys on the weather programmes have been saying it could have gone a couple of ways this week. And again, it's been down to the jet stream meandering about. And I think there's a branch broke off this week, and it's allowed a high pressure to come in off Europe from France. So the colder stuff is going around Scotland and the warmer air is coming up from France. And I think we could also get the odd thunderstorm. I know a couple of days ago, I was in the garden and I had a really big clap of thunder. Couldn't see any thunder clouds at all. It was really hot and muggy. I don't know where the thunderstorm was, but we couldn't see from Rotherham. But it was a really big bang. But there was no rain. And I think it's just all the friction in the high cloud.
Yeah, it's bizarre because, I mean, it was 25 degrees yesterday.
I got a sweat on. Yeah, when we went out in the van, I got a sweat on in the van.
I know. And then I read, by Wednesday next week, it's going to be something like 13 degrees. How can we drop that amount?
Yeah, it's all about where the air's coming from. That's what it is. You see, we associate temperature with sunshine, which is logical, and that's what happens. But there's also the underlying air that's over the land to start with. So this is what we're saying. When I'm doing my astronomy, it's good when the jet stream moves south and we get some cool, steady air that comes down from up north. It makes the atmosphere nice and cool and steady. But it also works the opposite way. So when it makes go north, we've got in the hot tropical air that comes up off the continent. But then if the sunshine comes out, it gets even hotter, obviously. Yeah. So, yeah.
Interesting stuff.
Yeah.
So, go on.
You can talk about the weather all day.
Well, you can, but it's fascinating. But it's all linked to astronomy, isn't it, as well? Because you were saying last week...
Because of the seasons,
but you're following the weather because the weather will dictate to you what you can see and how well you can see it.
If I get my telescope out or not in the evening, that makes all the difference. Because I can plan what I'm going to do. If I'm going to do some observing, I'll work out what I want to see, how I want to see it, what time I'm going to be seeing it, and if I need to get my gear out, because it'll take me 15 minutes, a good 15 minutes to set my stuff up. And you need to make sure it's pointing in the right direction and everything's acclimatised. Well, the telescope will take an hour to acclimatise. I don't want to be getting anything out. You see, this is it. A lot of people think you're out all night doing astronomy. You want to work out really what you want to do, what you want to see, plan your time, do it, and then get back in the house.
Yeah.
Otherwise.
Yeah, there forever. So what's worth looking at then in the coming weeks? Or
Well, I've been trying to photograph a planetary nebula and some globular clusters to see how good I'm getting my telescope to perform, looking at the brighter, easier stuff. And then once I've kind of perfected getting some photographs using my iPhone, then I'm going to get onto the fainter stuff, the more trickier stuff, and try and get some really harder images to photograph. Well, I've been photographing globular clusters and a couple of planetary nebulas.
What are they then exactly?
So a globular cluster is one of these star clusters that's like in orbit around the galaxy. And it's like the light about 50,000 light years away, and the like a mass concentration of stars that are really quite old. And they look like comets. They used to think they were comets in the olden days until they realised they weren't moving because they're like fuzzy blobs. Now we've got better telescopes. We can actually see these objects are made up of individual stars. But
wow.
If you look at them with telescopes and things, smaller optics, they look like fuzzy clouds.
Wow.
And then your planetary nebulas are stars that have like exploded but not disintegrated completely. They blow a shell off and they like glow, so you can like see like they look like planets but kind of glowing in the kind of green end of the spectrum. And they look, you know, really interesting.
Is that how you know what they are?
Yeah.
Because of the colour?
Because they're a circle. They look like a planet, and you can usually see the star in the centre, or you might not be able to see the star. It depends what how big it is or on the magnitude or how close. But some stars are quite close, some are really, really far away.
And on that note then, Paul was asking, what is a star? Remind us, what is a star as opposed to a planet?
Okay, so the basic element in the universe is hydrogen. So we get clouds of hydrogen floating about and kind of condensing. As these clouds condense, they gain gravity and mass, get bigger and bigger and bigger, and start to clump. When they're big enough, and then they start to, well, I would say implode and get smaller, what happens is that they start to heat up under gravity. And they'll get like warmer, so it's a bit like a squash ball. If you keep squeezing a squash ball, they get warm. So if you put things under pressure, they naturally get hot, because what you're trying to do is the particles are causing friction with each other. So they'll get to such a temperature and such a pressure where you'll get nuclear fission. These molecules interact, get a nuclear reaction. You get heat, you get a light beam coming off. That's a nuclear reaction. And what we're seeing is all the photons coming off the nuclear reaction. So a star is basically a cloud of hydrogen being converted into helium.
Wow.
So, and of course, these clouds are never the same size. So you get small stars, and you also get massive stars that are like bigger than the solar system. And that's when you get like super red giants these massive white stars as well.
So, you know, all the stars that we see then, if you look at the constellations, as you would say, you look up and you see the plough, they're all made up of stars, but those stars are always there.
Yes.
They've formed, yes. And they haven't disappeared.
Yeah, so the galaxy's spinning around like a big Catherine wheel, and all the galaxies... the spinning, and all the stars are going round in a pattern in the galaxy. Some are closer to us, some are further away. The ones that are faint and further away, you can't see. The ones that are far away and really, really big, we can see. So you can't really get a feel for how close or far away they are with the brightness.
Ah.
So because there's vary so much in brightness and size.
Yeah, I can tell. Yeah. We can tell you on location, Phil. What on earth is somebody doing?
oh, my wife's having a rummage round in the car.
Is she? Hey, steady on. It's a family show, you know. Good morning, Karamia. Is it Karamia, isn't it?
Karamia.
Eh? What's she rummaging for?
Oh, I think she's after a phone.
This shit, oh my word, I hope she hasn't lost it then. Amazing. Well, this is what we love about live radio, you see. You're handling it very well, Phil, because you're just ignoring her, aren't you?
Yeah.
Amazing. Is she going to say hello then, or she's not interested?
No,
oh, no. Oh, no. That's made her run, hasn't it? That's made her run fast. So, yeah, brilliant. So I think Paul's just missed all that conversation on what a star is. I'll be telling him later on. But what else
and
is...
Of course, these stars get bigger and smaller, depending on how old they are. Of course, we've said before, all stars are like people. They're all individuals. Depending on how big they are, depends how long they last and the different cycles they go through. Some end up being supernovas, some end up being brown dwarfs or red dwarfs, some end up as supergiants and explode. So there's a vast variety of stars out there and all different things happen to them. So yeah, they are really interesting objects.
So we're coming into autumn now, and you said this is your favourite time of year because it's still kind of warm.
And it gets dark at a reasonable time, so 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, a good time to be out. Not too late to stop up. Might do an hour outside looking at certain things.
So what's up there at the minute?
Well, just at the moment, Saturn started to. We've had a bit of a planetary light during the summer, so now Saturn's starting to come up. About 12 o'clock, you'll be able to see quite high in the sky now. And the ring systems come into edge on, so you can just see the ring system, and it's quite a nice object to look at. And then later on in the evening, way after midnight, there's Jupiter and Mars there up, and they're coming up in the eastern horizon, and they'll come up to Christmas. They'll start getting higher and higher in the sky, so you've got the planets to look forward to coming up to this Christmas.
So which is the one, moving forward, what's the most exciting thing for you astronomers to look at in the skies we come into from now into Christmas time?
Oh, that's really difficult question because everybody's into different things. So, I mean, the sun, Mike's going to say the sun because Mike just photographs the sun and is really, really good at it. And then we've got a couple of moon nerds who just photograph the moon, and we get the moon every week in our slideshows. The good thing about the moon, though, is it's going through its different phases and libration, so it's at a different angle each time it comes round. So you get to see craters and different features and see how the moon works.
So that's a technical term for your club, is it? Moon nerds.
Moon nerds. and then there's the planetary people. So Saturn's really good object to try and photograph. Anybody who's interested in planets, try and look up Damien Peach on Facebook. He has his photographs and he's got to be the country's best photographer of the planets, and he's also really good with the moon as well. He's just absolutely fanatical with his equipment, how he sets it up and how he uses it and how he develops his film, because it's all digital camera and photography work now. There's so many things you can do with your images to make them better. So what you're actually seeing is way, way superior on the film, and you can digitally enhance these things. Now you might think it's altering the image, it's just making the image more clearer.
Yes.
There's different techniques to use. It's out of my league. I'm still trying to learn. I'm just starting how to do digital photography with my phone and I've just bought a digital camera off a Timo, believe it or not. Only paid £20 for it, should have been 80, got it for 20, and I'm just learning how to use this camera on the moon. So once I've learned to do that, I'm going to move on to some other stuff.
Is this another addition to the ever-growing collection of stuff you need for your telescope? You don't want it, you need it. I've learned this throughout my life. I need it. I've got to have it. I need it. It's essential. So are you a planetary man then?
Not initially. I mean, I like galaxies and the faint stuff. But to be honest, you've got to be interested in the planets and the moon and the sun and aurora. It's like there's something for everybody, and everybody's best at something. I'm not sure what I'm best at, to be honest.
Well, just about everything in my book. You could be a weather reporter, you could be a teacher, science teacher.
It's good to have a general round knowledge in most things, I think.
Yeah, because it all interlinks often, doesn't it?
Yeah. See, I keep dabbling in little bits and I keep picking bits up in different areas, and you'll find one thing will help you do something else.
Going back to this Damien Peach, is he a member of Mexborough and Swinton Astronomical Society, or is he just somebody who you follow on?
He is an amateur astronomer. I think he's in Boston.
Is that in America? Lincolnshire.
Hey. Yeah, he's British. He's British.
Because there's nice skies, there's clear skies, there's a lot, you know, down there. We've just been in Norfolk and there's no light pollution where we were.
Yeah, yeah. I think he's in Lincolnshire. I think he's in Boston area.
And it's nice and flat.
His photography is absolutely superb. Everything's spot on.
Has he ever done a talk for your club?
No.
You need to get him on, don't you?
We do.
Masterclass.
I think he's a busy person. I think he's in full-time employment and he does astronomy like most people.
Well, like most of you, aren't they? So I know you're in your van and you're on location, so you probably don't know what's up and coming for your club.
Look online.
Go on msas.org.uk and that'll tell you... It'll tell you which speakers you've got coming up and who's been on, and you get some right people.
Meeting at the church hall on Church Street in Mexborough. We're renting the room once a week now.
But it's not got a bar. Phil.
No, it's not got a bar. We've got tea making facilities.
Yeah, it's not quite the same, is it?
It's not the same.
Yeah, boo. You'll have to take like crisps, a cool box.
Crisps and nuts.
Yeah, brilliant. So what else is up to look at? If it's a clear sky, of course.
Well, the sky, the constellations are moving round now, so we're moving out of the summer constellations.
Yeah.
And we've got things like Aquarius coming up. There's Uranus coming up as well, and Neptune. They're fainter, but they're coming round in the sky, so we'll be able to see them in the next couple of months. And then there's things like Pegasus, Andromeda. Andromeda galaxy is quite large and spectacular. That'll be with us well into the winter. And then we've also got H3Chi and Persei, which is a lovely open cluster. So, excuse me, my throat's catching up on me.
Oh.
So there's some winter constellations, autumn constellations coming round. And, of course, after Christmas, there'll be Orion up, which will be another big thing to photograph. So, yeah, everything's kind of shifting round now. And we've got Cassiopeia and... Cepheus high up in the sky, which are really good to photograph, and Cygnus, of course. Cygnus will still be up. Summer constellation, but it's still high up in the sky.
Brilliant. Well, we were down in Norfolk, on North Norfolk coast. There was no light pollution, and I'm absolutely certain we could see the Milky Way.
You probably could, yeah.
So it's there all the time. It's just whether or not you can see it.
Yeah, that's right.
So
you just need a darker sky. When it's dark, your eyes can see so much more. It's just because the light pollution, the light scattered in the atmosphere and the cloud and water vapour, it makes all the difference.
Yeah.
A couple of weeks ago, someone said it was clear. What about John Leach? He says, I've got my sea star out. He says it's clear down at Crystal Peaks. And I looked outside, I could only see one or two stars. Now, it wasn't cloudy, but the air clarity was absolutely atrocious. But it wasn't cloudy. Now, I'm not sure if some really, really thin high cloud or if it was just like a mist in the sky, but it was really difficult to see anything. But you couldn't see clouds, which is a bit unusual.
Yeah, I think it's the first time I've seen the Milky Way in the UK. I've seen it in Greece. I've seen it in Turkey. I've never seen it here. And I think that's all to do with light pollution, isn't it?
It is. You can see, you should be able to see it in Norfolk. Same down in Cornwall and parts of Aberystwyth. If you go up into the hills near the Red Kite Centre, you can definitely see the Milky Way from that area. Because we've been there and done it. If you go to Kielder, Milky Way is really, really good from Kildare up in Northumbria.
Wow.
Lake District, I've seen Milky Way from Lake District. Again, it's not... Lake District isn't as dark as what you think it'd be, but
no.
it is pretty good.
Brilliant. And on that note, I shall let you get back to your job of the day.
I'm going to have to get a cup of coffee now.
You are. And have a rest for the rest of the day, Phil. Brilliant talking to you.
I'm not going to get that.
I know, as always. Thanks so much, Phil. Bye-bye.
Have a nice week.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.